Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A new documentary celebrates the life and legacy of one of soccer's greatest stars, Pelé, and it does it against the backdrop of his country's politics. Directors David Trihorn and Ben Nicholas use archival footage and new interviews with the Brazilian footballer himself, now in his 80s, to form the backbone of their film, Pelé. What they present is a story of an incredible athlete, a prodigy who remains the only soccer player to win three World Cup championships, 1958, 1962, and 1970. But it's also a very political story, as Pelé became a kind of unofficial ambassador for Brazil on an international stage in the 50s and 60s, a Brazil that was under the control of various violent dictators. Ultimately, Pelé not only demanded respect for Brazil around the globe, he helped Brazilians to have pride in themselves. Pelé premieres on Netflix on Tuesday, February 23rd. Directors David Trihorn. Hi, David.
Hi, Allison. How are you doing?
I'm good. And Ben Nicholas. Hi, Ben.
Hello. Great to be on the show.
Thanks for coming by. So when you first approached Pelé with the idea of making this documentary, David, what was his initial reaction?
His initial reaction was positive, actually. I think, you know, he's 80 now, so the timing felt right. And when Ben and I talked about this story, it was always one of these things like, hasn't Pelé's story been done? And it really hasn't. I think everyone has this relatively superficial knowledge of the story. And so we said to him that we wanted to contextualize his story so that people understand exactly why he did the things he did, when he did them, and how he became a myth. But also, I guess as the years go by, you kind of forget the man behind the myth. And we wanted to humanize him so that the viewer would have someone that they could emotionally connect with. And I think he understood that. I think he was ready to kind of seal his legacy at the age he is now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The first shot, Ben, we see of Pelé, and he's walking towards a chair, and he uses a walker, and he's sitting down, and then he just kind of like shoves it away. Like, get that out of the shot. Did you know that was going to be your first shot when you saw that happen?
No, we had no idea about that, really. That was a kind of lucky accident. But yeah, I think you're right that he's a very proud man, I think, and as arguably the greatest sportsman of all time, maybe the most famous sportsman of all time. I think he is inside. He wants to reject that walker in that image, and that image speaks quite loudly to that. But no, that wasn't really planned, and it was something we always had to keep in mind that we're dealing with one of the most famous men to ever walk the planet here. So it was more a kind of a situation where whenever we heard the car pull up outside, we'd press record on the camera and just try and capture everything. And that was the first time he walked in on the first day of the interview. So that was a thumbs up moment between the two of us when we saw that happen. But yeah, it's a great opening image, I think. So I hope, anyway.
Yeah, and he definitely let you know who he was in that moment. It's so interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, David, let's talk a little bit about Pelé's early life. His father was a footballer as well. Who was the first person in Pelé's life to realize that he was something special, that they had a prodigy on their hands?
Well, I think it was probably a mix between his father, and then he had a coach as well who played for Brazil, I think, in the 40s, or 30s or 40s, a guy called Valdemar de Brito. And I think between them, you know, he comes from a very sort of humble background and a normal little town, sort of a few hours outside of São Paulo, where people just didn't become the most famous person in the world. But I think they spotted something, and as soon as they did, it was a case of finding a club for him. And it happened to be Santos. I think in so many occasions in the film, Pelé is the right guy at the right time. It just sort of, it happens for him. And again, he joins quite a small club, actually, the sort of club that you wouldn't go on to become the greatest player of all time in. But it just is working out that there's a little generation of young players equally talented, and they go on to sort of create this club that becomes the strongest club in the world.
Yeah, Ben, what was the reputation of the Santos club on the international stage before Pelé came up?
I mean, I think it would have been almost not that well known at all, certainly on the international stage. I think there would have been a middle-ranked club in Brazil. We'd had occasional high points, but I think it's something that it's hard to explain these days because you don't really get that. You have the kind of the powerhouses in each sport and they seem to remain at the top somehow. But in those days, I think it was slightly different. And he was able to catapult them to something they could only have ever dreamed of, because at the time he explodes onto the scene, it's kind of the late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, media's opening up, you know, players are starting to become celebrities. Pelé is the first of those. And also things like air travel is opening up. So Santos mm-hmm. are able to monetize Pelé and tour him all around the world. So they become this kind of traveling circus of a football, playing all the European giants, playing in Africa, playing on all the continents. So he's able to really drag them to the top of the game from somewhere that was kind of inconceivable that would be possible before Pelé starts there.
David, what was Pelé's style of play? What made him the best at that time?
I think it was, if you actually look at some of the archive images, and certainly some of the archive images that we used in the film, actually ended up on the cutting room floor, it seems ahead of his time, a very modern player, very physical, extremely strong, skillful. He could use both feet. For quite a small guy in stature, he was unbelievable in the air. So I think everyone we spoke to, and from the images that we saw, always just talk about the completeness of his game, that he had no weaknesses, and that perfection is probably an overused word, but I think in Pelé's case, it's used a lot. And he actually admitted to us himself at one stage that, you know, he is a perfectionist, and I think that's what always drove him.
My guests are David Treihorn and Ben Nicholas. We're talking about their documentary, Pelé, which is on Netflix. It will be available as of Tuesday, February 23rd. So, Ben, in 1950, Brazil hosted the World Cup. What were the nation's hopes for the event?
I think their hopes early on would have been quite big. I think by the time it got to the final, I think there was almost the expectation that they'd already won. So the whole country is ready to celebrate at that point. So what then follows that is a disaster that can only be compared to kind of, they call it their Hiroshima in Brazil still, which sounds over the top for a football game, but I think it really was something that built into this whole complex that the country had at the time of being a country kind of riddled with self-doubt and riddled with a doubt that they could ever succeed on the global stage. So that's why when 1958 comes along, it's such a profound moment, not only for Pelé, but for Brazil itself.
Yeah, a few people interviewed in the documentary referred to this feeling people in Brazil had, and this is the language they use, a mongrel complex, especially after that 1950 World Cup. Language aside, what do they mean by this, and how did Pelé help get Brazilians out of this mindset? Ben?
Ah, sorry. I thought you were pausing, David. I think they mean it's a country. I think they mean that it's a country that they can't trust themselves to succeed. They always think the other is better. Mm-hmm. They always expect the worst to happen. They always expect defeat to be grabbed from the jaws of victory. So when Pelé comes along, he seems to be untouched by this. And in the film, hopefully, you get that idea that it's a country that just knows it always gets to the edge and then can't quite push over the line. But he seems untouched by this and just comes along and smashes down the door and says, you know what, guys, that was the pass. Give me the ball now. I'm gonna take care of this from now on. And from that point on, he becomes the symbol. And that's why it's this crazy situation that a 17-year-old kid becomes the king of a huge country and the symbol of this huge, growing, exciting, new Brazil.
Yeah, David, it's interesting in the film, when you're talking about him being a kid, we follow his life as well. And he seems super shy, and he even says, you know, he gets married and it's covered in the, you know, in the media, and he's like, well, we kind of liked each other. He just seemed a little bit like his whole life was soccer, and outside of it he seemed very, very shy.
I think when you become so famous at the age of, let's say, 16, and then he was winning a World Cup at 17, and then suddenly, as we talked about this inferiority complex, he becomes the symbol of modern Brazil. And he then now has the burden of an expectations of an entire population on his shoulders. That's a hell of a lot of pressure. But the interesting thing is, and you can see from the archive, he does look a little bit shy, but then every now and then he'll catch the camera lens, and there's that magnetic smile he has, this incredible smile. And you can see why the sort of cameras love him and why people love him. And I think as much as he's shy, he seems to be incredibly good at dealing with fame, where other sort of world-class or famous or world-famous athletes can crumble with that. He seems to be able to take it all in his stride. He knows what people want from him. And we've discussed before, he's almost like this kind of old-school Hollywood studio system star of the 50s, where you get to be a little bit more passive in terms of your fame. Mm-hmm. But he seems to take it all in his stride very easily.
Yeah, he does have charisma, even for the sort of shyness and as he's navigating it. The charisma is always there. Let's talk about the politics, because this is such an interesting part of the film. I mean, you could look at the soccer matches and the archival footage to the end of the days, but then when you start to layer in the politics of the situation, things get really interesting. So, David, what was the political situation in Brazil when Pelé was first playing, and then what really shifted in the 60s?
Well, I think one of the really interesting things when we started making this film and why we sort of decided to time lock this era between 58 and 70 was how Brazil was taking shape as a country. And so in the late 50s, when Brazil win the World Cup in 58, Brazil is becoming this very modern nation. They have an economic boom, a cultural boom. You know, Bossa Nova becomes one of the most popular forms of music in the world. Their cinema is hitting new heights. And it seems this country that's got really on the up. And then in 64, a right-wing military dictatorship takes over. And that lasts for the best part of 20 years in Brazil. And things become very, very complicated and quite repressive and brutal by the time we get to the late 60s. So we always felt that sort of Brazil and Pelé, their stories are quite intertwined. You know, this is much a story about the birth of Pelé as it is about the birth of Brazil. And I think that's what makes it fascinating. He seems to almost mirror what's happening in Brazil. When he's on the rise, Brazil's on the rise. When he's on his knees, Brazil's on his knees. And that takes us towards the kind of inevitable climax in 1970.
Ben, it seems that Pelé's strategy through his career was to try to stay out of politics as much as possible, even though he's been put forward. And he repeats that multiple times throughout the interview. How did he react when you started to ask him questions about politics and his relationships with Brazil's dictators?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And it's kind of what Dave was just saying, that he's a star of the late 50s, early 60s. And I think, you know, it's quite hard for us sitting here in 2021 to understand quite how different that would have been, because he was a star without precedent. There was no one before him for him to look up to as an example. So I think his response really was to cope with this fame that we've been speaking about, to cope with this idea that he's a symbol of a country. His idea, or what he kind of fell into, was creating a kind of Pelé character to deal with that, almost a kind of superhero character to deal with that. And so when, as time goes on and you see things starting to change in the world in the 60s, and you start to feel that perhaps what people want from their stars starts to change, and you see people like Muhammad Ali come, you know, rise to prominence, Pelé decides, consciously or subconsciously, and we always try to never speak for him or say what he did was right or wrong, but he kind of makes the decision to stick with the program. I've created this character and I'm going to stick kind of middle of the road. And it is quite interesting, because he comes from a background that I think would have been overjoyed at the idea of becoming the establishment. But then the world, maybe in the mid-60s, is starting to veer towards characters who are trying to rally against the establishment. And so Pelé's caught in this kind of interesting situation that hopefully in the film comes to a head as we approach Mexico 1970 at the end of the film.
Yeah, David, at one point in the film, he's asked by, I'm not sure if you or Ben, if he was aware of the torture being employed under an authoritarian regime. And he says, "If I told you I didn't know anything, I would be lying. We knew a lot about things." How did Brazilians feel about watching their hero interact with a dictator?
In all honesty, at the time, I doubt they gave it much credence, because I think, you know, Pelé represented so much more. He wasn't, you know, while he was a very apolitical figure, he, at the same time, he wasn't supporting the regime. It was much more the regime wanted to align with Pelé to give them a kind of a good face rather than the other way around. You know, Pelé's job, as far as he was always concerned, was that his actions were going to speak louder than any words, and it was what he did on the pitch that was breaking down barriers. And so I think the fact that he never aligned himself to the government meant that probably Brazilians at the time didn't suddenly kind of hate Pelé for what he did. You know, he remained almost a source of hope in the darkest times for them.
My guests are David Trihorn and Ben Nicholas. We're talking about their documentary, Pelé, which you can watch on Netflix as of Tuesday, February 23rd. You know, there's so much great footage, archival footage, and I know you went through so much for this film. Ben, what was there a piece of footage or an image that when you found it, you just were so excited?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few of those. I think as soon as we knew we had this structure that we were going from 58 to 70, it was always, if there's anything kind of surrounding those moments to really kind of heighten things emotionally. And I think one of the key ones was seeing the end of the World Cup in 1970, when you see the crowd run onto the pitch and you see Pelé lifted up. And when we saw the full rushes of that moment, I think we knew that has to be the climax of the film. You know, that is a kind of Hollywood Ridley Scott epic kind of style set piece ending for the film, so everything kind of worked back from that. On the other hand, there was also other bits of finding archive interviews of him talking at the time, you know, are quite precious, even though there's a lot of archive of Pelé at the time. Finding him talking on screen was rarer, so whenever we found an interview of him talking about politics or trying not to get involved in politics, or equally, there's a clip in the film where he's interviewed and says, I don't want to play in the World Cups anymore because after they lose in 66. And that was a story we'd been told and that we'd read about and we'd researched, but we never could quite find anything to really back it up. And when we found that archive interview of him in Portugal on the way home from the 1966 World Cup saying, I'm done with World Cups, I don't want to play in World Cups anymore. That was a great moment. That was very much a high five in the edit suite moment.
There are many incredible moments in this film. It is called Pelé. It is on Netflix on Tuesday, February 23rd. David Trihorn and Ben Nicholas are the directors. Thanks for being with us.
No worries.
Thanks so much
for
having us.